May 13th, 2021. Masechet Sanhedrin, Daf Lamed Bet Amud Bet. We're eight lines from the top, if you recall. The Gemara, at the very end of a little bit more of a detailed discussion, had a derasha. It had a derasha from the fact that there seems to be a, not glaring, but a contradiction in Pesukim. One Pasuk says, Besedek Tishpot Amitecha. It has one mention of the word Sedek, of righteousness, of acting just as you deal with judgment. Uktiv, and then alternatively the Pasuk says, Sedek, Sedek Tirdof. That's a double mention of Sedek. So the initial derasha of the Gemara in the context that we were studying was, Kan bedin murmeh, kan bedin she'enon murmeh. In other words, the difference is whether you suspect the individual who's standing in front of you, who's making his claims. If you suspect him, Sedek, Sedek, derisha v'hakira is necessary, even if it's dinei mamonot. If you don't suspect him, if his claim is not, for some reason, raising eyebrows, in such a circumstance, derisha v'hakira is not necessary. Okay, but once we dealt with that, says the Gemara, let's have several other discussions and debates about those words. Rav Ashi amar, matnitin kedeshaninan, or kedeshanin. Says Rav Ashi, the Mishnah, that stira, that contradiction, that bygone discussion which we had, how do you resolve our Mishnah, which seems to suggest that derisha v'hakira is necessary in dinei mamonot, and the Mishnah, Masechet Shvi'it, and the Beraita, kedeshanin, one of the three answers we gave yesterday. You might remember them, du hazara, you'll remember them for sure. Says Rav Ashi, however, not my issue. What I'd like to pay attention to is kira'eh. Those pesukim, in which the debate to a certain extent ended with, the sedek sedek versus sedek, I'll tell you how to be doresh those. Ehad ladin ve'ehad lipshara. This is when the pasuk says, besedek tishvot amitecha, it's dealing with a regular circumstance. You come into court, the judges, the dayanim, should in an appropriate fashion proceed with the dealings. However, sedek, sedek, tirdof, the double mention of sedek, it's not referring just to a case of regular judgment. It's furthermore referring to pshara. What's pshara? We saw these sorts of words in the first perek. It's when there's a compromise that's found, which means to say the judges need to come into the case with open eyes, determining whether it's appropriate for regular mishpat, regular judgment, one person will walk out happy and the other unhappy, or pshara, where I'm going to make a compromise and nobody will walk out happy, right? But I mean, that's the decision that has to be made. And each of those determinations need to be done besedek, need to be done genuinely. Kidetanya, as the Beraita, in fact, supports that statement of Rav Ashi and elaborates a little bit as to what it means when I do mishpat and when I do pshara, when I do the strict judgment and when I look for a compromise. Sedek, sedek, tedof, ehad ladin ve'ehad lipshara. So there it is. Rav Ashi is directly supported from the Beraita that when the pasuk in the Torah says sedek, sedek, tedof, it's referring two times to sedek to tell you, be a little expansive, appropriately in your mishpat. How so? Kesad. How would you determine, how would you distinguish between when it's appropriate to do mishpat and when, in contrast, it's appropriate to do peshara? So we give two interesting examples. These are not two examples in court. It's two examples from what was their real world. And as a result, you'll understand those and apply it accordingly. Shete sefinot. You have two boats, avrot benahar. They're passing in opposite directions in a narrow river. Upag'u ze bezen. They come in contact with one another. Now the circumstance is, im avrot shetehen, shetehen tobot. If each of them plows forward or rows forward, oars forward, they'll knock down each other and they'll both sink. So they can't do that. What about alternatively, beze aharze? If one moves off to the side and allows for the other one to pass by, shetehen avrot. All right, so then they can both pass by. Again, two boats, each coming at the other. This would be nice imagery, right? In a narrow river. Now, if they keep going, they'll crash. That's no mishpat. That's not walking into court. You have a chaotic world. You have a world of anarchy. Alternatively, one can, quote, win this case. Go over to the side and allow for the other one to come in. The one that comes through is the winner of this case. He's the one who's zakai, and the one on the side is hayav. How would you have a pshara? Well, we'll see in a second. V'chein, so too, shenei gimalim, if you had two camels, people riding on camel riders. Shehayu olin b'ma'alot bet horon. It's the name of a narrow place, ma'alot, the steps or the ascension of bet horon. U'pag'uze b'zeh, so they're on a mountain and they're both, one's going up and one's coming down, or they're both next to each other in this valley area. If they both directly at the same time go up into each other or at each other, they'll fall and they'll die. What if one backs up a little bit, turns off to the side and allows for the other one? Okay, so in such a circumstance, they can both make it. And that would again be a judgment case. You and you, A and B, come in front of me and I say, you can't both be right. A, you win this case. B, I'm sorry, you're going to have to give in to this. Kesad, how would you determine who, quote unquote, wins the case? Again, if you're in front of me, I have to determine based on evidence. Over here, how would a judge make that determination? Now, don't go to the bank with this. We're not actually giving halachot of ships and camels. We're giving an example with which, you know, you can apply it. Kesad, te'una v'she'ena te'una. What if one of the boats or one of the camels is carrying a load, whereas the other one's not? Which one gets preference? Te'una tidahe she'ena te'una mipine te'una. Excuse me. Te'una v'she'ena te'una tidahe she'ena te'una mipine te'una. Right, the one which has the load on that camel, the boat which has the load, takes preference. That's the one which actually has to get through because it's got the goods on it. It's in more of a dangerous situation. What's that? The goods are the evidence. The goods are the determination that that's what's that.
Not tzedek anymore. You favorite one of them. Well,
that is tzedek. What do you mean? You and Sharon come in front of me and I find that you're zakai and he's hayav. You won the case. That's tzedek. That's not pishara. It's not pishara. As I said, you're going too detailed, too literal over here. That's why I said, don't take this to the bank in terms of how to deal with this.
In today's court cases, the American attorneys will always advise you 100% of the
settlement.
Let the jury make the judge.
I know.
A settlement.
So I've heard. So I've heard from many a lawyer, as I've learned Gemarot with them as well. All right, not the way we're. But this is mishpat. Alternatively, keruba v'she'eno na keruba. What if one of the boats is close, or one of the camels is close from the place where they departed, whereas the other one has already been on quite a distance? Now, which one takes preference? Which one takes precedence, rather? Tidahe keroba mipene she'ena keroba. The one that's been on its way, so to speak, has hazaka over here. It has the right of way. Some have the opposite girsa, which would amount to the same thing, because it means one's closer to its destination as opposed to the other one, and so the closer to its destination takes precedence. Again, in each of these circumstances, we're not talking about a real din Torah. We're trying to give some sort of perspective on if you find, as Jesse say, for some reason, evidence that one wins the case. That's how you win the case. Okay. But we're trying to give me an example of when you do pishara as well. When would you do a settlement? When would you act like the American court system, Sammy? Hayu shetehen kerobot, shetehen rechokot. What if the circumstances, neither one of them is carrying a burden, a load, neither one of them is further than its original case, a place, or closer to its final destination? They're in identical circumstances, and here they are head-to-head with one another. I know I'm not allowed to mention his name for several reasons, but Dr. Seuss has a book in which these two things come at each other and neither one of them is willing to budge, and they stay like that forever, and they build cities and roads around them. I wish I remembered the name. We don't have those books in my house anymore. No, I'm just kidding. But I don't remember. That's such a circumstance. So that's the situation. They both have a right of way. Neither one of them will budge. What are you supposed to do? That's where you do pishara. Hatel pishara benehin. I can't determine this case because in terms of the empirical evidence, I can't determine. It's not that there's not enough evidence to force him. It's that there's enough evidence on both sides. So what do? You make a settlement, uma'alot sachar zo lazo, and they determine financially who's going to get the passage of way based on, I'll pay you in order to allow you, I'll give up the business deal, which I was in a hurry to get to by taking your money for the right of way and so forth. That's when you'd end with Peshara. Why was the Gemara mentioning this example and so forth? Because again, Tzedek Tzedek was a dirasha in the eyes of the rabbis of not only Yikov Adinata, not only do you determine you win and you lose, that sounds like strength to the Dayanim. There's a strength also in compromise, and sometimes, oftentimes, it's appropriate to end with that settlement and compromise. Says the Gemara.
Rabbi, that Tzedek Tzedek is teaching us in this particular situation, be a Tzedek. Be the righteous person and let him go.
It's nice. It's nice. I'll accept it from you as me and you. But over here, it's talking about what the judges should do. So it's not so much who should determine. And also, it's telling you, take the money. It's talking about a real settlement, of course. I'm sure you, Sammy especially, has heard it from my father. My father always quotes my grandmother, whom we heard it from forever, but he heard it really forever. And she would always say, you be the good one. In other words, you're in a situation where, come on, you know you're better than him and you deserve it always. By simple wisdom, you be the good one. That's that message, but it's not the message of the Gemara here. Yes, Jess. Oh, okay, Joe.
It seems to me this analogy you brought in, it's more towards the litigants than the judges.
Why so? This is where...
Okay. More towards the judges. No, where, the compromise is more for the litigants. The litigants have to agree to the compromise.
Of course, okay. I, as the judge, need to determine what the compromise will be. You guys are over-literal on this example. Okay. We're just giving an example where you need that.
50-50 indeed.
Nothing more and nothing less. That's it. You know.
A lot of wording for that.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, it's trying to give you imagery. Kids would love this. Kids would be excited. You gave me a simple example.
Theoretically, the judges, after the fact, could make the guy pay.
What do you mean by after the fact?
This happened. You two people in the boat, they're not going to the judges at that point.
Again, imagine it outside of there. It's just an example to give you, in the eyes of the judges, a parallel. This case is not coming in front of the court. No, it's not.
Do the litigants have to accept the compromise push that the Dayanim are making?
No.
So they can just go to another Beit Din?
No, no, they do. Oh, that's so what I thought. I thought you meant, do they need
to make a compromise?
It's over.
That's it.
It's over. And again, as the Gemara told us, either in the first Pirik or elsewhere, they both walk out unhappy. At Peshara, you imagine, I made peace in the world. You made peace in the world, but not amongst these two. Because these two, each one of them, thought they were going to win. Tanu Rabbanan Tzedek Tzedek Tirdof Halech Ahar Beit Din Yafeh. Instead of being a derashav, two tzedeks, a tzedek of Peshara and a tzedek of Mishpat, the idea is it's encouraging you to race after tzedek, to be rodef after it. How do you find tzedek in a redifa fashion? Find the best, the tzedek tzedek Beit Din. Find the best Beit Din. How are you going to do that? Of course, by reputation, of course, by your knowledge of the circumstance. But seek out the best Beit Din if you're dealing with the circumstance. How so? Ahar Rabbi Eliezer Lelod. That's a name of a place which is very much in the news right now, right? But go to Rabbi Eliezer in Lod. His Beit Din would be a top-notch one, apparently. Ahara ben Yohanan ben Zakkai lebaror hayil. That's the name of the place where, apparently, Rabban Yohanan ben Zakkai had his Beit Din, Beror or Baror Hayil. We'll talk about that place in just a minute. Okay, so that's it. So the Beraita gave examples of Rabbi Eliezer's Beit Din, of Rabban Yohanan ben Zakkai's Beit Din. Of course, you'll say to me, and you'll be right, it's easy when you tell me Rabbi Eliezer and Rabban Yohanan ben Zakkai, what about in 2021, where are we going? The answer is, I don't know. I mean, you'll have to do your research on what's Beit Din Yafeh. But that's the statement over here. Now the Gemara has a digression. Again, it's a digression in no way related to what we just mentioned, other than the name of that place, Baror Hayil. We're going to mention the name of that place in a funny, almost out of place description. Here it is. Tana, but I'll give you a background to the description. As per Rashi, this and Tosafot, this is talking about during a time of, Rashi writes, Gezerat Malchut. Gezerat Malchut literally means decrees of the monarchy. It's a censored Rashi. In the Ozve Hadar Gemara, there's a mark on that word, Malchut, and it says that the original version said Gezerat Shemed. Shemed means persecution. So this is a time of religious Jewish persecution. And as a result, they weren't allowed to, as per Rashi and Tosafot, not understanding Gemara, they weren't allowed to have Berit Milah. Oftentimes in our history, Berit Milah was one of the first things to go in terms of the government saying, How could you be doing that? It's a religious rite, which is inhumane, and so on and so forth. You're maiming a perfect body if you're dealing with a Greek time period and so forth. I mean, that's the description. Some of the Mefarshim have that one of these cases is referring to weddings as well, which you can understand why there would be a Gezerat Shemed on that as well. We don't want the Jews getting married to one another. We don't want them building communities. We want them coming together with us. We want, if something's going on, we want to know about it. So as a result, there were secret ways of designating and making clear to the people that this is what's going on today. We have a Berit Milah. Don't mention it, but we'll make noise and in a fashion that everybody will know and they'll know where to congregate. There's a wedding. We'll do something that people will pick up on it without saying those words and we'll steer clear of danger. So that's the circumstance. Kol Rehaim. So if there's the kol rehaim, rehaim is the grinding stone. So if you hear the sound of a grinding stone in a place called borane, you should know it's shevua haben, shevua haben. It's the week of the sun. In other words, you've passed a week of a sun, and it's the day of the Berit Milah. So that's where you walk into this neighborhood, into this village, and all you're hearing is grinding stones going. Why are there so many grinding stones? It's code. The code is it's a Berit Milah day for this village, for this town. Why the sound of grinding stones? Suggests Rashi, in order to grind the herbs, which would be medicinal for the child who got the Berit Milah. So that's why it became designated. You, technically speaking, needed to have the medicine for the baby. You would grind it. So now, if you're trying to get the word out, you're grinding. So you walk in, you hear the grinding in the morning. That's them calling to you. It's Shavua Bin. It's Shavua Bin. It's the week of the sun. It's the day of Berit Milah. What about if there's Or Haner? You walk in, it's daytime, but you see candles everywhere. Bibaror Hail, in that name of the place where Ban Yohanan ben Zakkai is. Why are there candles everywhere? Mishtesham. Mishtesham. That's their way of expressing and yelling out to you without words. There's a party here. There's a party here. What type of party? So Yad Rama, Rabbi Meir Abu Laafya learns that this is a mention to weddings. I'll just mention that first, and then we'll talk about Rashi and Tosafot. Weddings, says Rabbi Meir Abu Laafya, they would have candles at them. If you've ever been to many, if not most, of the Ashkenazic weddings today, they walk down to the chuppah holding candles. I wonder if that's still left over. It's a remnant. I remember being at a wedding of a friend of mine, and my Rosh Hashiva was there as well, and they walked down without candles, and he freaked out. And I turned to him, I said, Rosh Hashiva, what's the candles? There's a halacha. I said, my community, we don't use candles ever. He says, Minhag Yisrael. I said, why is it Minhag Yisrael? He said, that's what we do. He went wild that they didn't do it. He didn't like it was an untraditional, in his mind, wedding. But, I mean, maybe this is the source for it. Maybe we've been doing it. What's that?
We do candles at the
Minhag. I'm getting there. One second. Now, again, that means, and what I'm translating into it, furthermore, Rashi and Tosafot suggest in this Gemara, it's not only during the time of Shemed. Rabban Yohanan ben Zakkai was not necessarily living during time of Shemed. And the Gemara is telling you, in their mind, going forward, this is the way it's designated. I mean, we know these sorts of things, that when something needed to be done because of a danger, but we kind of continued to do it. So that's what we're dealing with over here. So it would make sense if you continue doing it at weddings, because it was done all the way back then for one reason. You continue doing it. What about Tosafot and Rashi, who seem to, Tosafot explicitly, learn that this is a reference to a milah? Tosafot on the right-hand side, the third one, says, Or haner bebaror hayil, writes Tosafot, mikan nahagu lahadlik ner bemilah. Says Tosafot, and you'll never see this in Ashkenazic milah today, to the best of my knowledge. And says, that's why you light candles at a milah. Indeed, says Jesse, we have Zania Eliyahu Hanavi. That's right. I got it down. Although I can tell you I've never seen it in our synagogue. But I mean, you see it in many places. I can't tell you why we actually do that. But maybe we could point to this Gemara and say that's why we've been doing it at Berit Milah.
We've done it.
Oh, you sold it. Yeah. All right, it's beautiful. In Arabic or in English? You get up and you announce it. All right. Anyway, that's right. I know. Again, I don't know what you're selling. I don't know what you're lighting, but maybe this Gemara, maybe we have Masoret to do so. There's something else interesting that is derived from this Gemara. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein brings it up in the following context. In Siman Resh Samich Gimal, in Ora Hayim, Shulchan Aruch from Beit Yosef initially talks about the following question. As you're together with your wife, is together, you're eating at your in-laws, you're eating at your parents, and your mother or your mother-in-law lit the candles there. Let's say you're sleeping the night there even. And so they lit the candles. Is your wife now going to light candles as well and say a beracha? On the one hand, you say, of course, she's doing a mitzvah. On the other hand, the point of the... Eesh, wow, that's all right. I mean, I thought it's something I said. On the other hand, lighting candles is supposed to be for light in the room. If it's supposed to bring forth light in the room and you're lighting right next to it, I mean, what are you accomplishing? How are you going to make a beracha on it? I remember once Rabbi Mordechai Willig from Yeshiva University, he said, when you go to hotels and everybody lights in the same place, he says, so now in the religious trips, what they do is they have a room just for lighting, and it's the candle lighting room. He said he always wants to put a sign up, the beracha levatala room. That's how he always said it. Anyway, so what are you supposed to do in this circumstance? So Shohan Bet Yosef quotes from Maharil. Maharil, it's an early Ashkenazic post, says Tosefet Ora, having extra light is appropriate, and you make a beracha for the extra light. Of course, we've got these things called electric bulbs, so the extra light, that's why many have the minhag to turn off the lights before they light, turn off the electric lights before lighting. So Tosefet Ora would mean that we're always doing. Wow, what's going on here? It means you're always doing something in the air. I don't know. It's the Torah. It's got to come back to that. It's the Tosefet Torah. Maybe you can make a beracha just for adding light. That's his claim. Bet Yosef cites it. And then in his Shulchan Aruch, in Siman Resh Samech Gimal, he says, but there's a mahloket on this matter, inappropriate. You shouldn't make a beracha. You can light, but don't make a beracha. Alternatively, of course, you can light in a different room where you're going to be enjoying yourself together. Ramah Rabbi Moshe Yisrael of the Ashkenazim says, it's okay, it's permitted. He follows Maharil. Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, discussing this matter, quotes our Gemara. He says, our Gemara is talking about lighting candles for either a Birit Milah or a wedding during the daytime, it appears. Why are you lighting the candles? Says Tosafot, says Rashi. Tosefet Torah is going to give extra happiness. It's a nice thing when you have something really lit up. It adds to it. So it's true, it's not your primary light. It's true, it's not your primary light if you left the electricity on when you lit candles. But when it comes down to it, it adds to it, and as a result, it's appropriate. That's how he goes on this matter. In contrast, argues Be'er Moshe, if I'm not mistaken, that's Rabbi Moshe Stern. He says, you can't bring sourcing from our Gemara. Our Gemara, that Tosefet Torah, our Gemara originated with a Shemid. It originated with a time of persecution. They happened to have continued it. It became what you did. But who said that's what you do in a regular circumstance? You light candles as Tosefet Torah? I mean, the response to him is, yeah, I mean, we do we not? I mean, you do have a fancy meal. There might be lights on, but there's still candles lit. And as a result, this issue is, to a certain extent, up in the air. I'll just conclude. Two things. First, I'll tell you Tosafot, and then I'll tell you Halakha L'Maaseh on this. Tosafot cites from a pasuk in Yirmiyahu. The pasuk in Yirmiyahu says, "V'ha'avaditim mehem kol sason v'kol simcha, kol hatan v'kol kala." Okay, it's a sad pasuk, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu through Yirmiyahu. You should know, with destruction, they're going to no longer have weddings. Then it continues, "Kol rehaim v'or ner." How do you like that? From the time of Yirmiyahu, we associated happy events with the sound of a grinding stone and lighting candles, says Tosafot. But I thought this originated at a later event during times of persecution. Says Tosafot, apparently it's something we've always done. We've been involved with designating happy occasions through the grinding stones, I guess, like maracas or something like that, right? And lighting candles, that's what Tosafot says. So the claim of Rabbi Moshe Feinstein, that candles, again, in addition to what we all know and perceive, it's nice to have candles even when you have extra ones, you have sourcing in Sefer Yirmiyah, that this is something we've always done in order to add to the happiness in some way or fashion. What's halakha l'maaseh? Hacham Avadia Yosef is posek halakha l'maaseh, like Shulchan Aruch. He says that if you're in a situation where you're not actually kindling the primary fire and flame, you should not make a beracha, which means say, if two people are lighting next to one another, one should make the beracha, let's say the akeret, the ba'alat habayit, and the other shouldn't make a beracha. If you can light in your room where you're sleeping in the home, so you do it in such a fashion. If you're going to eat there and you're leaving your home, home and you're able to light at a in a way that's safe and will last a while, so you do it like that, so that when you come home, you're still able to benefit from the light. Ideally, we don't light next to one another and make a beracha. The arguments are made against it. Shmirat Shabbat Kilcheta says, maybe you could. It says, maybe we don't light any longer, only for the light which is produced. It's rather became like a minhag halacha. They accepted it. We accepted upon ourselves. We just light. That's what we do. So you're going to tell this woman not to light without a beracha? It became a new halacha, which is a fascinating discussion. Anyway, that's why this Gemara comes up.
Light in her bedroom, make the beracha on that, and then do a symbolic light of the candle.
Absolutely. I say, well, I guess I'm saying it on recording. Always off recording. When people call me and ask me what to do in these circumstances, I ask the following. I said, I'm not telling you to light a flame that will make you make you uncertain and feel unsafe. Mm-hmm. Ideally, you're lighting a flame. That's the minhag. Alternatively, if you have a non-LED light, if you have an old-fashioned light bulb, yeah, make the beracha on that. And then it's appropriate, as minhag, when you go to the other house, the other place, light without a beracha. Indeed, I'll always tell people to do so. Make sure the one that you lit in your home is something that you're going to benefit from, you're going to enjoy when you get home, even for a few seconds, for a few minutes. That would be the ideal way to do it. Yes?
First of all, why doesn't tradition play a role here?
Role where?
When lighting candles for Shabbat.
What's the tradition? What do you mean? That's the question.
Going on for thousands of years.
We're still lighting for Shabbat. The question is, what's the tradition when you're lighting next to someone else? I mean, we're trying to establish a tradition. Yeah.
Okay, but what is the bottom line? If I'm not eating home, I'm eating, let's say, by my daughter. Do I light in my house just for the mitzvah, but I'm not eating here? And do I have to come back in time to see the lights? And if I don't, is it a bit of habatala?
Yes, the answer to all those is yes. Right, you need to, you would light in your home if you could in a safe fashion, and you would need to see it when you come home. That's why Jesse suggested, turning on an incandescent light bulb.
My daughter lights, I hear a bit.
You can do it that way as well, but you should make sure that you have in mind, if you're nervous about making the beracha on a light bulb, I understand why. Whatever, so put on, but have in mind that that's your lighting, and then hear the beracha from her.
So
yeah.
You
can be also the beracha with her. Again, you're doing the mitzvah irrespective. It says the Gemara onward, Tanur Rabbanan Beraita, Sedek Sedek Tirdof. This is a derasha we saw, but we're just going to elaborate upon it. What does it mean? You shall truly run after the greatest Sedek, absolute Sedek, absolute justice. Halecha Har Hachamim Li Yeshiva. You should go after the rabbis for their Beit Va'ad, for the places wherein they are situated and dealing with halacha in an appropriate, best fashion. How so? Ahar b'Eliezer le'lod. We saw that one. Ahar ban Yohanan ben Zakkai le'baror hayil. Ahar b'Yoshua le'pakirin. Just the names of the places where they had their batei dinim. Ahar ban Gamliel le'yavne. With an aleph. Amar b'Akiva, ahar b'Akiva rather, le'bnei Berak. Ahar b'Matya le'romi. How interesting. He was in Rome, it sounds like. There's a discussion whether it's Rome in Italy, or maybe there's a place called Romi in Eretz Yisrael. It reminds me of, Little Italy. Ahar Rabbi Hananya ben Tradion le Sikane. Ahar bi Yosef le Sipori. Ahar bi Yehuda ben Betera le Nesivin. Ahar bi Yoshua la Gola. Ahar bi le Bet She'arim. Ahar Hachamim le Lishkat HaGazit. We conclude even with the Sanhedrin and Lishkat HaGazit. That's Hachamim. Okay, again, why are we mentioning this all? We're mentioning this in the context of Sedek, Sedek Tirdof, make sure you find the highest and best Beit Din, even if it's going to be a little uncomfortable for you. The Gemara continues. The Mishnah, if you recall, said further that there's a distinction between Dinei Mamonot and Dinei Nefashot. When you're dealing with monetary, financial disputes, you could be poteach ben lischut ben lechava, which means, say, when the judges open the deliberation on the case, there's no necessity that they first speak in one way as opposed to another way. In dinei nefashot, they must open, their initial statement must paint the case as, we're going to let this guy off the hook. We need to talk about zechut immediately. What does it mean to be poteach lischut? How do you do so? The Gemara will have a debate. In other words, what's the appropriate procedure for the judges in a dinei nefashot case? As a person potentially going to be liable for the death penalty, they need to, after hearing the witnesses, speak up and say something to paint the direction of this case toward life. How do they do so in an honest fashion? Says the Gemara, hechi amrinan. What is it that they say? Amar of Yehuda, hache amrinan lehu. This is what they say. Mi yemar kedika amritu. This is what they say. They hear the witnesses and then they say, Who says that it's like you say? They suspect them out loud. They heard kosher witnesses who walked in, made their statement. Who says that you're right? Why should we believe you? Amar le Ula v'hasminan lehu. Says Ula, if that's the case, you're muzzling them. I mean, everybody's going to be suspected. I mean, every time you speak up in court, we're slapping you. We're telling you to be quiet. We're suspecting you. V'lehasmu, says the Gemara. Oh, yeah, that's right. Muzzle them. Milatanya, don't we know from the Beraita that we look to muzzle the witnesses? Of course, not literally muzzling them. We're looking to silence them. We don't want witnesses to come and put someone to death. You don't want them to put them to death, but that's the deen. Okay, hold with that. As the Beraita says, Rabbi Shimon ben Eliezer Omer, Masi'in et ha'edim mimakom lemakom kedei shetitaref da'atan ve'yachseru bahem. Right? The halacha is, according to this opinion, that you take the witnesses from one case, you bring them into one room, say, okay, can we listen to your talk? Wait a second, as you're about to begin, this room, there's something wrong with the lighting. The acoustics are off. Let's go down the hall. And you do that from several places and on several occasions until the titaref da'atam, until they go crazy. Forget it. I don't even want to testify any longer. Wait a second. So that's how we do it. In other words, your question, again, the initial statement was suspect them immediately. Say to them, why should we listen to you? Who said you're telling the truth? Says, come on, if it's inappropriate, then you're going to have witnesses who are afraid to testify. That's right. We try to do that. We take them from place to place. You're really nervous about it? So, no, you didn't understand. Hatam midame. Is it really similar? Hatam mimela kamitchu. Hacha kadachinan lehu biyadayim. There's a distinction between these two cases. If you're the two witnesses, I'm bringing you from case to case to case, from room to room to room, and quieting you, and then asking you again, and so forth. You're going crazy on your own. I may have inspired the craziness, but I didn't say or do anything directly to have you go crazy and to walk away. Over here, as you spoke up, my initial response is, biadayim, I say, why should I believe you? There's a distinction to be made over there. On the one hand, we know it in life. You can hint something to someone and try to get them along that path. When you say it directly, sometimes it's inappropriate. Ela, rather, the way you're poteh bizchut in a case of dinei nefashot must be different. Amar ula hache amrinan. This is what we say. Yesh lecha edim lehazimam. So we heard the tovea, we heard one side who has witnesses, or maybe it's only about one person who's mehalel Shabbat, and there's two witnesses coming. Now we turn to the defense. Now we turn to the lid. We said, excuse me, do you have any witnesses who can knock them out? That's your initial statement. Do you have any edei hazama? Are you able to displace those two witnesses? All right, we're looking to help him out. We made a claim in our initial statement. We're looking to help you achieve life. The counterclaim is, Ula, fantastic claim, but understand what you just did. There's two witnesses in the room who are testifying that this guy, person X, is Hayav Mita. Okay, we're looking to save his life. How do you look to save his life? You say, are there any two witnesses who can knock out those two witnesses? What happens to those two witnesses once they're dead? So you were looking to achieve life. Ultimately speaking, you achieved death on the other end, says the Gemara. Not really. This is not actually chova. Don't you know the halacha? The Mishnah tells us in Masechet Makot, v'hatenan en eidim zomimin neheragin ad sheyigamer hadin. The only way and circumstance wherein will actually kill the false witnesses is if the case was closed. We closed the case, we put the gavel down, and we said, he's hayav mita. And then we find eidim zomimin, that they're eidim zomimin. That's when we put them to death. If it's in the middle of the deliberation, before we close the case, it's true you are wrong. It's true we're going to give you lashes for being false witnesses, but we're not going to put you to death. So if my initial question is, are there any Eidei Hazama? I haven't closed the case. I'm not actually going to be killing them. All right, so then that's good. Potchein l'schut. Hache amina. Says, Ula, this is what I meant. Ilu shatik hai ad migmar dine umayte edim umazim lehu avya lechovato shel zeh. Says, Ula, you're right. Okay, listen. When it comes down to it, you're giving me technicalities. Here's the case, one more time. Two witnesses come in. My initial statement is, do you have two witnesses who can knock them out? You're right. At this point, my claim is not going to kill them. However, you might keep quiet, Joey. You're under the limelight in this circumstance negatively. You'll keep quiet, Shatik, until the end of the case, and then you'll bring your edim mizimim, or maybe you'll be looking for them throughout, and then you'll, ultimately speaking, bring forth death. In other words, it's an inappropriate expression. If the whole point over here is we're looking for life, we're looking in order to bring forth life, how are you bringing the potential death over here? One says the Gemara, Ela Amar Rabba Amrinan Le Yesh Chayedim Lehakhishan. Okay, so we don't talk about Ede Hazama. We say there are two witnesses who say, I saw you on Shabbat doing this. I saw you kill that person. Instead of displacing the witnesses, can we displace the person, the defense person? Do you have witnesses who could say you weren't in that place? Do you have witnesses who say that person's actually still alive? Ede HaKhasha, you're not killing anyone. You're just saving life. You're not dispelling of the witnesses and putting them to death. Rav Kahana Amar, Midivrechem Nizdaka Peloni. Alternatively, he says, listen to their words and say, from your words, witnesses, now they think we just put this guy to death. I hear zechut. You hear zechut? What are you talking about? Yeah, that's my initial statement. I, reading between the lines, I heard something. I hear zechut. Already you open the case in a positive light. We're thinking life. Abaye v'ravad amre tevayu amrinan le ila katalt latithal. Says Abaye and Rava, this is what you say to them. You say to the defense, you say, listen, sir, I heard those witnesses. If you actually didn't kill, don't worry. Just relax. Rochi, you're going to be all right. That's already potrin bizchut. You already shone a light on the case, which is positive. Lastly, Rav Asher Amar, kol mi sheyodea lo zechut, yavo v'yelamed alav. Says Rav Asher, this is what you do. You make an announcement. We heard the witnesses. Okay, thank you, witnesses. I want to make an announcement, public service. If anyone knows how this guy is zakai, how he's not going to be a hayav mita, please come and speak up. In other words, in each of these circumstances, each of these suggestions, we're looking for an appropriate statement which will point the case in the direction of zechut of life, as opposed to chovat death. Baruch Adonai le'olam. Amen. Amen.